Welcome to another episode of Code for Thought, Bite-Sized RSE. And welcome to Season 2, again supported and sponsored by Universe HPC. And as with Season 1, you'll get 8 short interactive sessions on a range of subjects, usually one per month. The subjects will cover different areas that we hope you as a researcher and research software engineer will find useful. And as before, each interactive session will have its companion podcast episode. And for this season, I have the honor of kicking it all off with both an interactive class and this podcast episode. And this being November and just a few days after Halloween, I chose a subject that can strike sheer terror into the hearts of researchers and software engineers. That's right, software estimation. Because no matter where you work, in academia, in a research center, or in a company, one day your boss or primary investigator, the PI, will tap on your shoulder and ask, "How long is this gonna take?" And sometimes it's like asking, "How long is a piece of string?" I certainly felt like this with previous projects. And the bad news is, there really is no easy answer, no silver bullet, nor a magic crystal ball into which we can all gaze to get a faithful and accurate prediction. But the good news is, there are steps that you can take to tame the beast. And in the course of this episode, I'll be taking you through some of them. Estimating our work is something generations of engineers have battled with. And over the decades, tons of books have been written on the subject. One of the early ones, from 1975 no less, is by Frederick Brooks, called The Mythical Man Month. As he writes in the chapter with the same name, the key problem in estimating projects is that we tend to be inherently optimistic, and our assumptions tend to be that all will go and end well, which Frederick Brooks says makes us bad at estimating. Other writers, like Steve McConnell, have been far more upbeat. In fact, in his book Software Estimation, he opens with the statement that software estimation isn't hard, and he continues that several experts have developed techniques that make your estimates more accurate. But he also admits that these techniques are mathematically quite intense. And in the early 2000s, agile software development practices have entered the workplace. And some of them, like for instance Scrum, try to get a better handle on how to make software projects more predictable and our estimations better. To date, there is really no shortage of techniques, courses and tutorials regarding estimation out there, and still, many of us, including myself, struggle with this. And why is that? Well, one reason is certainly what Frederick Brooks mentioned in The Mythical Man Month: we're overly optimistic in our estimates. But in my experience, there's also another factor: time pressure and impatience. Managers and PIs breathing down your neck and not giving you enough time to estimate. Like, for instance, the PI who needs to submit a grant application in 2 days and wants an estimate right now. Or the manager who meets a client and promises them to get an estimate from you within a day, or in brackets, even commits you to the project without asking you. But for me, the main reason why it's hard is the uncertainty of what it is you're actually supposed to be estimating. What's the scope of the project? What do we need to build this? Are we making the wrong assumptions? Did we understand the PI and the client correctly? And in the next section, I'll be talking about this crucial first step in the estimation process, the conversation or negotiation between you and the PI or client. But first, back to the book, The Mythical Man Month. Frederick Brooks starts with a great quote from a restaurant he found in New Orleans. It says, "Good cooking takes time. If you're made to wait, it is to serve you better and to please you." Well, I'm not sure if the restaurant is still there, but the quote is certainly true. And a good estimation, like a good meal in a restaurant, takes time, good ingredients, and a systematic and reproducible way of cooking it all together. Of course, restaurants have the benefit of having a fixed menu for their clients. We, on the other hand, have to cook with whatever our guests, the PIs and clients, tell us they want, which means we have to spend some time and effort in trying to understand as best as possible what kind of dish they actually want to eat. And all the clever estimation tools and techniques out there won't help you if you don't understand the scope or misinterpret what the PI and clients want. It is this initial conversation or conversations that will shape not only your estimation, but the way the project will go. Actually, it's not so much a conversation, but a negotiation, really. And unfortunately, I can't get into too many details about the negotiation skills, but here are a few tips. First, don't do it alone. Make sure you have someone else from your team or your department to join. Second, make a plan before you go into it and write down what it is you hope to get out of the meeting. Third, take down notes right from the start and make the discussion transparent and share your understanding and notes whenever you can. Some PIs and clients provide you with a detailed and comprehensive list of what they want you to do, which makes the negotiations, of course, a bit easier and shorter. At the other end of the spectrum are PIs and clients whose requests are a bit more fuzzy, and it may take several rounds to find out what you need to know in order to provide a good estimate. Whatever the starting point is, however, at the end of this initial phase, you need to have the basic understanding of the project and its scope. Things like, what's it you're building and who is it for? How is it supposed to work? Where and on what system are the solutions supposed to be running? What's the timescale and what's the budget? Do you have the people and experience to do it? But also, who will you be dealing with on a regular basis? Are there any legal or regulation issues, such as, for instance, handling of data in medical applications? Are there any dependencies on other teams, legacy technologies, and so forth? What points you and your team need to get an answer for depend on the type of project, the PI and the client, of course. As I said, some negotiations go very fast, some on the other hand take several rounds and may take some time. But then, of course, there are the cases when the PIs are really breathing down your neck. We need this answer now, they say, and don't have the time for long discussions. Or perhaps they simply aren't available for discussions. There are no easy options for this, I'm afraid. They usually break down into four choices. You can, of course, give them what they want, a crude estimate, and warn them it could be wrong. In my experience, quite frankly, that doesn't work so well, and there's a good chance you will be held to your original estimates, no matter how many caveats you put around them. At the other end of the spectrum is to be brutal and just say no. And that can be quite difficult as well. I mean, after all, you don't want to upset the PI. You may have to work with them in future. Another option is to say, we'll give you that much time, but we can't promise we'll be finished by then. The PIs may not like when you dish them a half-cooked and lukewarm meal, on the other hand. I would always argue, and that's the fourth option, for buying a bit more time. You're not doing yourself or the PI any favours by coming up with a bad estimate or no estimate at all. But for the minute, let's assume that we have all the info we need and we can move on to the actual estimation, which is what I'll start doing in the following section. Estimation starts with translating what the PIs and clients tell us into a list of steps and tasks we'll need to implement to get it done. It's like, we need to know what dish our guests really want to eat. And now that we have this information, we need to have the ingredients to cook it. Our list of ingredients is called a backlog. There is a technique of writing this backlog that may help you estimating and in fact running the project. And if you're familiar with agile software development practices, you might already have heard of it. It's called a user story. What is that exactly? Well, it's trying to write requirements from the point of view of the people who'll actually use your application or service. The people, that is the users, could be the end user of your web application, for instance. It could also be a system administrator, or it could be you, the developer. So let's take an example. Let's say the history department at your university is asking you to build a website. And on the website, members of the public can record historical discoveries, like, for instance, a coin or a vase or something else. So one of the user stories could be, as a public user, I want to record a discovery on your department's website and specify where I found it. The user stories can be for different types of users as well, as I said. So for instance, as a researcher, I want to review all discoveries of coins in an area of 5-mile radius around a given location. Or as a system administrator, I want to monitor the traffic to the website based on time and origin. In short, the user story tells you what each user of the system expects. But it usually doesn't tell you exactly how you do it. For that, you and your team need to define the technical steps or tasks you need to take to build it. When you write user stories and then define tasks, you'll find there are some gotchas. For one, user stories may not be easily defined. They may be too broad and too fuzzy, in which case you may want to rewrite them. And you may also find that tasks may not be unique to each user stories. You could actually have a task that applies to several user stories. I appreciate that the process may sound a little bit convoluted at first. I mean, after all, why not simply write down the list of stuff you need to build? In my view, the benefit of user stories is that it doesn't only focus on the technical tasks, but also looks at how it's being used and how it fits into the overall solution. It helps to focus on what actually needs to be done, what's important and what's not, and it helps you to build a better task list or backlog. And it is this task list and backlog that we'll use to do our actual estimation in, which is what I will turn to next. So, do you want to play poker or do you want to do some statistical analysis? If you do a web search, you'll find there's a very large number of tools and techniques for estimation. Different as all of these methods are, they're usually based on the same unit of estimation though, and that is the unit of time it takes to finish a task, and, as the sum of it all, the time to finish the project. Usually the methods are very collaborative and focus on getting estimates as a team effort. For instance, the planning poker. This is one of them and a very popular one too, and it's used quite a bit in agile development practices like Scrum. It goes a little bit like this. You start with a deck of cards, each member gets a deck. You read out the task to be estimated. Each team member picks a card with a value face down on the table. Then all the cards are turned over at the same time, and if you find there are gaps or differences, you discuss them and one hopes agrees. And that's your estimate. It can be great fun, and there are different variations of this game, the actual poker cards of course. Some like to play with numbers like a Fibonacci sequence, and you can also play it online, and there are various different tools available now these days. Another method is the so-called three-point estimation. And as the name suggests, you provide three different sizes for each task. One, which is the best-case scenario, one, which in your view is the worst-case scenario, and another one, which you regard as realistic. The value taken can then be either simply the mean value of all three, or if you like, you can introduce some weighting factors to emphasize your optimistic and pessimistic scores. Personally, I'd argue that planning pokers, fun as they may be, are more suitable when projects are actually running. When you're already working on a project, you and your colleagues already have a decent understanding of what you do. Agreements are usually quickly found and differences resolved easily. Well, that's the theory. And it's probably for that reason that you find planning poker being played in Scrum planning sessions. What I like about the three-point method is that it makes you think, what's the best case, but also, what's the worst case? Remember the book I mentioned at the beginning, The Mythical Man Month? It says we're all too optimistic when we estimate our work. But here in the three-point estimation, you are actually asked to bring out your inner Cassandra. Making me think about worst cases can help me get a better range for my estimate. And for that reason, I like this method for sizing new projects. There are, of course, a number of other methods, like for instance, t-shirt sizing or using more sophisticated statistical methods as I alluded to at the start. The episode notes provide you some links. Okay, well, that was a lot of talking and a bit of a crash course in estimation. And perhaps you're asking yourself this question.
How much longer are we going to circle the airport road? You want to bring this baby in?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I brought it all home, but I hope that you'll take at least these points. Estimation takes time. Try and resist the rush through it. It's also a team effort. It also means understanding the scope and ultimately understanding your PI and client. And finally, take a systematic approach, all of which should help you to provide reasonable estimates. Don't be too hard on yourself, though, because it takes some time and experience to get better at this. And with that, happy estimating, and I hope to see you at the next bite-sized session. Thank you so much for listening to this bite-sized RSE episode. The interactive sessions are organized by Jeremy Cohen from Imperial College in London and Steve Crouch from Southampton University. The podcast is produced by Peter Schmidt. And finally, we'd like to thank the Universe HPC program for supporting and sponsoring this program. And with that, goodbye, and see you at the next bite-sized RSE session. Oh, time's up. See you next time. But before I forget, this podcast is covered by the Creative Commons license. See ya.